We're continuing with the paragraph that we only touched upon yesterday due to our time constraints. Paragraph of Avoda, the temple service. We mentioned yesterday that the Gemara tells us that there's actually three different parts of the Shmoneh Esrei. The first three brachos correspond to the Shevach, the praise that we give, just as a servant. Or any time you ask for something, you don't just jump right into it. You have to first ask nicely. You have to first praise that person. And then afterwards, you can start asking for things, which is the middle component of the Shmoneh Esrei. And then the last three paragraphs, beginning with Ritzei, is the time in which we're thanking Hashem for the gifts that He provided for us. Now, if we look at this paragraph of Ritzei, Ritzei Hashem Elokeinu B'Amcha Yisrael, so it says in the English, the beginning makes a lot of sense. Be favorable toward your people, Israel, and their prayer, and restore their service to the Holy of Holies of your temple. We're asking Hashem to restore and to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. That's the idea of this paragraph. And then it says, this next sentence is a little bit difficult. It says, starting with the Ishei, the fire offerings of Israel in their prayer accept with love and favor. Now the second part makes sense, that we are asking Hashem to accept our prayers, especially at this point, because this is, we've just asked Hashem for things, and now immediately we're asking Hashem to accept our prayers. But what does it mean when we say, V'ishei Yisrael, the fire offerings of Israel? I didn't bring any karbanos today, and so what exactly does this mean? So some explain, based on what we recite in Karbanos in the morning, in Sefer Hosea, the famous sentence in the Shalma Parim Sefoseinu, let our lips compensate for the bulls, for the offerings. And the Orchos Chaim explains in greater detail, what does it mean when we say the words V'ishei Yisrael, what are we supposed to be saying, or what are we really meaning by these fire offerings? He says, Afal Pi, Shein makriven achshav karban, even though nowadays we're not bringing sacrifices, and we're not supposed to bring sacrifices, even if you wanted to, nonetheless, hatfilos keneged timidin tiknu. As we've mentioned before, our davening is instead of the tamid, the sacrifices that were brought continuously, namely the tamid shel shachar, the tamid shel ben arboim, the shachars, and the mincha service, that we have nowadays corresponds to the sacrifices that were brought then. And therefore, the Orchos Chaim is explaining that when we say V'ishei Yisrael, even though we're not really bringing karbanos, but our davening is taking the place of those sacrifices. In greater detail, Rabbi Eibeshitz explains the significance of the word karban. A karban, which we have all different types of karbanos, all different type of sacrifices, as it's called, or offerings, as is mentioned throughout the Torah, he says that the correct translation of karban does not mean sacrifice. It's not an offering. He says, rather, you have to look at the shorash, you have to look at the root, that which tells you the essence of what a karban really is, or its significance of its purpose. Because a person can certainly look at what goes on in the base of Mithnish, certainly if you're a member of Pita, you're a vegetarian, like, what's going on over here? We're killing animals, what's going on? So he says the significance of the word karban comes from the word, the first three letters, karov, to come close, which is also the name of when you're talking about a relative, they're called your karovim, your relatives, because hopefully they're close to you. They're certainly close to you in blood. Well, you might want to sacrifice some of them, right? Some in-laws, whatever. But nonetheless, that's the reason why it's called, they're called karov, karovim. And that's also the idea, explains Rav Eibeshitz, of why it's the real translation of a karban is something which brings you close. And therefore, when a person brings the animal or sacrifice, whatever it may be, in the Beis HaMikdash, it wasn't just that they brought some animal and there was blood all over the place, but really it was an opportunity for that person to go to Hashem's home, to the Beis HaMikdash, and to be able to be engaged in the avodah and the service, and to be able to connect in this way to Hashem. So by bringing a sacrifice, it was karban. It was an opportunity for you to become karov, close. Therefore, Rabbi Eibeshitz explains, when we no longer have the opportunity to bring these karbanos, we also have the opportunity, karov, to come close. We don't do it by bringing sacrifices, but rather, as we said, in Shalom Parim Sivoseinu, that we can do so in the same manner through our davening. That when we daven, it's not just lip service, and it's not just something which is mandatory, which it is, but it's an opportunity for us, if we daven with a proper understanding in Kavanah, just like a karbon, it's an opportunity for us to come close to Hashem. And one of my favorite tefillos, which is actually brought down also in the Gemara and Brachos, is recited on the day of a fast. How a person is supposed to envision themselves fasting, which is part of the davening, is a very interesting tefillah, which is at the end of Mincha, which some recite at the end of the fast. I'd like to just share you this paragraph, which I believe is very moving, but it also really articulates this point. Ribono shel Olam, goli v'yadu lefanecha, it's revealed before you, b'zman shebeis hamikdash kayim, the temple stood, adam chot mevi karma, if a person sinned, you bring an offering. V'ein makrivin mimenu el l'chel bo v'damu, the only part of it which was actually consumed were the fats and the bloods of that. V'yatah barach necha rabi mechaper, and you with your abundant compassion forgave that person for their sins. V'yachshav, and now, this is what a person says, yashavti v'tainis, I just finished fasting. And what does a person do when they're fasting? It's the ultimate diet. I've now shed a few pounds. I've lost a little bit of the fat within me. That which I lost within myself, consider it as though I actually brought this offering. That's an interesting tefillah, which some say. Rabbi Mishnah says that this is the correlation between a sacrifice and our davening. But on a little bit more of a scary point, he explains, when it comes to a karbon, a person has to make sure that when it's being brought, you have to have the proper machshava, you have to have the proper thoughts. For example, if a person would bring a sacrifice, and they would have certain thoughts, for example, eating the sacrifice outside of its designated place, or beyond the designated amount of time that sacrifice is supposed to be eaten, that sacrifice is considered to be invalid, cannot be used. Similarly, he says that if you have an animal which looks fine, except it has a small defect or a blemish, which is called a mum, that also invalidates the sacrifice. Explains Rav Eibeshitz, when it comes to our davening, we also have to view ourselves in that way. That when we daven, we should also not have a machshavara. We should rather have the proper train of thought when we come to daven. And furthermore, we have to make sure that within ourselves, we should not carry a mum, any type of blemish, but rather when we stand before Hashem, it should be proper, with the proper kavanah. I'd like to conclude with the words of the Yarat Devash. The Yarat Devash explains the last part of this paragraph, which says, V'sechazeno einenu b'shuvachal etzion barachamim. May our eyes behold your return to Zion in compassion. So what does it mean, let our eyes see? So the Yarat Devash explains that if we contrast this to the story in Sefer Bereishis, the story of the destruction of Sodom, then we know that there was a couple of people that were able to leave that city. One of them was Lot, and his wife was another one. However, it was specific instructions that the wife was not allowed to look back. And of course she did, and we know what happened to her. What's the significance of why she was not allowed to look back? It's because she also really deserved to be destroyed. She only was allowed to be saved based on the zechus, the merit of Avraham Avinu. And therefore, she did not have the right to be able to behold what was happening. However, explains the Yarat Devash, ourselves, the sechazenu einenu b'shuvachol etzion barachamim, we have that right to be able to not only experience the ultimate geula, but also to be able to see it, to witness it. Because of the difficulties, the bitter, goalless exile that we've endured, we have that ability and we have that right, and we're therefore asking Hashem, bring about the ultimate geula, and let us see this, Hamachazir Shechina Sol Etzion, Hashem who restores His presence to Zion. Thank you.